So I guess the larger question that we're asking in sort of beginning to plot the history of Jewish life in Western Europe is, how do Jews succeed in trade? How do they travel? How are they mobile, and so on? And despite appearances, despite the fact that it's not so clear to establish every particular detail here, it would seem that overall Jews had some advantages. They were also, of course, mobile, because there were sometimes difficulties in terms of Jews living among their neighborhoods, and therefore they were forced to move. They were forced to seek new opportunities, and thus the emergence of trade. Now, having said that, I want to give you a very specific example, which I think is quite extraordinary. It is a mid-ninth century text written by an Arab, a Muslim geographer named Ibn Cordoba. He describes the existence of a group of long-distance traders who lived in the 8th century, who he calls the Radnites, apparently from a region near Baghdad. These were Jews. They were merchants who traded in slaves and luxury goods, traveled from the Middle East to the Slavic regions of the north, across Europe to Spain, and finally returned home via North Africa. They even traveled to China and the Far East. Now, we're talking about the 8th century. I mean, what do we know about trade in the 8th century? But here we have a group of itinerant Jewish merchants who are clearly a connecting link between the Muslim and the Christian world. There are too many names and places here to read all of this, but I just want to tell you, read this to show you I didn't make it up. They speak, and here is Ibn Cordoba speaking. They speak Arabic, Persian, Greek, Frankish, and the Lusatian and Slavonic. They learn a lot of languages. It's not just Hebrew here that we're talking about. They travel from east to west and from west to east by both land and sea. From the west, they bring adult slaves, girls and boys, brocade, beaver pelts, assorted furs, sables, and swords. They sail from the land of the Franks on the Western Sea and set out for Al-Farama. These names are too difficult for me to try to identify. There, they transport their merchandise by pack animal to a port on the Red Sea, which is 25 parasangs away, and then they go down the Red Sea coast of Arabia and Jeddah, and after which they proceed to Sindh, India, and China. From China, they bring musk, aloes wood, camphor, cinnamon, and other products obtained from these regions as they make their way back to this place, Al-Kulzum, and then they transport it to another place, and so on. He describes in great detail a whole series of towns and names of towns which elude me for the moment. But we are speaking about not just trade here. We're speaking about crossing continents, going all the way to the Far East, going all the way up to northern Eastern Europe, and then crossing over to Spain, coming back across the coast, and so on. We don't know very much more than this text, but we can assume, if this text is accurate, that we are speaking about one of the few connecting links that existed when the boundaries between the Muslim and the Christian world were established. So clearly, Jews got to this area then because of the trading routes. The next question, of course, which is equally fascinating, is how do you become a community? In other words, how do individual merchants who are by their very nature itinerant, moving on, mobile, how do they establish themselves and create communities? And how do you create a Jewish culture, a Jewish infrastructure, a communal structure, but also a literary culture, a culture which is going to be studying a rabbinic text and being creative in Jewish literature? How do you translate, the merchandise into something that is much more spiritual, intellectual, cultural? That is not such a simple thing. As you will see, these centers, I mentioned the three in the Rhine Valley, for example, will become great centers of Torah, of learning, of rabbinic exegesis. How do we translate the world of the merchant to the world of the scholar? And if you think about that, I mean, how many businessmen do you know actually have time for scholarship or can do? I actually know a person that actually writes books and also makes millions. But there are very few people like that. Not, by the way, that these people made millions. They eked out a living. But nevertheless, it is a very fascinating question. How do you move from economic history to cultural, intellectual history?